Hey, Chloe, what does the United Nations have to say about children's rights?
You know what? It actually has a lot to say. Let's talk about it.
Politics, culture, faith, and so much more. This is Fact of Life with Chloe Noller and Mattingly Watson on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.
Welcome back to the Fact of Life. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are so excited for our episode today. Today we're really going to wrap up that nuclear family series, talking about the nuclear family and the building blocks of society. We've taken a look at the history of the nuclear family, asked the question if it's a modern concept. We've also looked at when the progressives started to attack the nuclear family. We've also kind of looked at some of the major consequences of society without the nuclear family. And in today's episode, we're really going to wrap up what we've been talking about, looking at the consequences for the children specifically from marriages between same-sex individuals or transgender individuals, that kind of thing. Also talking about abortion, IVF, and adoption, and things like that, and just really talk about the rights of children and the harm that not having a nuclear family with a mom and a dad can have on them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're in like a really neat place right now with where we're at in life, because obviously, you know, we're just coming out of our like childhood years, kind of on the receiving end of that. But we're also just now getting old enough to the point, like, I mean, Chloe and I aren't getting married and having a family anytime soon, but like we're getting close to like that age where like,
yeah,
that could be like the next life steps, you know? So it's kind of like in that in-between phase where we're about to maybe enter one in years from now and then like coming out of the other. But what's cool is that in researching for this episode, we got to read some really interesting stories and statistics in a book called Them Before Us, Why We Need a Global Children's Rights Movement, by Katie Faust and Stacey Manning. And the story of how we got this book is actually pretty interesting. So a few weeks ago, Chloe and I had the honor of speaking at one of Hillsdale College's Center for Constructive Alternatives series, which they host twice a semester, and you know, different people come in from out of town to listen to it, and we got to present on our show and all the different things that come with that, specifically talking about some of our episodes. But afterwards, this really wonderful lady came up to us, and she very kindly offered to send us this book for free, and so we got to read it. Neither Chloe or I had read it before, and so a lot of what you'll hear from us today and kind of some of our talking points are, you know, stories we read in here, statistics that, you know, Katie Faust and Stacey Manning made in here. Mm-hmm. But it's a super interesting read. I think definitely provides some different perspectives, kind of a different take that I personally haven't seen all of the time from media. I think it gives it a new perspective that's definitely really enlightening.
Yeah, definitely. I really appreciated her approach and really just gave a great argument from both sides, really, of the effects of, you know, the lack of a strong mom and a dad for a family. And so what I thought was interesting is she starts with the United Nations, and she talks about articles that are written about human rights and children's rights. And crazily enough, all of these countries agree on what the rights of children should be and are. And it's really interesting when you take a look at it, because a lot of the things that the United Nations, all of the like the nations in the United Nations agree on that children have a right to, it's interesting when you look at it that children are not actually given these rights these days, especially in America and especially in places that are really supporting abortion, supporting the LGBTQ movement, and supporting transgenderism and same-sex marriages. And so we just kind of wanted to take a look at some of these articles. It's kind of crazy. They say that in Article 7, it said they should be registered immediately after birth and have the right to a name, the right to a nationality, and as far as possible, the right to know and be cared for by his or her parents.
Mm-hmm.
Article 8 talks about the respect of the right of the child to preserve her identity and family relations. It says that the child shouldn't be separated from her parents against their will, except when and separation is necessary for the best interests of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you find in this, and something that she says in the book, is that abortion and reproductive technologies, she says they're adult-centric. They focus on the adult above the child. It's not about the child's rights anymore. It's about the adults.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I love, she said, is she said, children are not items to be cut and pasted into any and every adult relationship. Children are the subjects of rights, not the objects of rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I find interesting, I love how she started the book talking about the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And I love these articles that Chloe pointed out because it's, you know, looking at the United Nations, these are cultures spanning across the globe. So many different governments as well. Not all of them republics like ours are, like ours is. But this really falls back on like natural right theory, which like, you know, our government in the United States like was founded on like the belief that we all have natural rights, and not all governments are. But looking at these articles from the United Nations, I mean, they very heavily rely on natural rights and what, you know, people just have a right to as a human being. And that's what these kids have a right to, no matter what government they're in, no matter what culture they're in. It's cross-cultural, you know, spanning across all of these things. But when it comes down to it, you see this deep right for family. And I think mm-hmm. that's interesting because looking in the past, no matter what culture you were in, like we've talked about with the nuclear family, there was such a reliance on family. And I think that through caring and relying on your family, it didn't take away your individuality, but it accentuated it. And I think nowadays people are neglecting these things that, you know, even the United Nations agreed on.
Yeah.
And they're just not accepting those anymore when it's not political. It's not a conservative movement to try to start forcing people to abide by this family structure. No, I mean, you can see that the right to family and these natural family structures not only have spanned across time, like we've discussed, but as you can see with the United Nations, have spanned across space, many cultures, many eras. Like,
yeah, like these are things that we agree on, mm-hmm. and it's not out of an agenda. It's out of mm-hmm. genuinely what is best for these people. And something, Article 18 is something that I think is crazy because it says, states parties shall use their best efforts to ensure recognition of the principle that both parents have common responsibilities for the upbringing and development of the child.
Mm-hmm.
There's responsibility. I love that word, responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is interesting is that you kind of see a change in America, especially when Obergefell versus Hodges came down from the Supreme Court. Katie Faust has a quote here from a woman who had parents that were of the same sex. And she said that Obergefell versus Hodges made it possible for my mom and her partner to marry as they so choose. And at the same time, in effect, it destroyed the right they had, or I had, to both my father and my mother. Our Supreme Court has essentially ruled that both parents were not critical to my health, development, and identity. Nothing could be farther from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
Well, and I think too, is what a modern day interpretation of that, like, everyone that has the right to be supported by, or what Article 18 said, that, you know, both parents have responsibilities for the upbringing and development of their child. What a lot of modern, especially liberal interpretations of that mean, you know, it's just, oh, provide money for them, like send in your check, like, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. But some stats that Kitty Faust brought up in her book, like 90% of homeless and runaway youths are fatherless. And then, of course, you know, homelessness and the life of runaways, those are common gateways to sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
70 to 85% of prison inmates grew up without a father. 63% of teenagers who end up committing suicide have absent fathers. Like, 71% of pregnant teenagers come from fatherless homes. 71% of high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. Yeah. And, like, the stats just go on and on.
Yeah,
really and does. It's like, you can be living in a fatherless home and still be getting the check from the father.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, and, you know, obviously, like we've discussed before, there's a lot of negatives going up in a motherless home as well. But there's, I don't know, I think there's such a reliance on money as what providing for means.
Right.
But when it comes down to it, it's just, it's not, you know, it's not, we shouldn't be a money-based anything, but mm-hmm. especially, like, that's not, you don't raise a kid on money. If you raise a kid on money, you raise a brat. Like,
right, right. Well, you know, it's just crazy because when you start getting into the same-sex marriages realm, you're looking at the biology and the gender, and this matters for these kids. Men and women both bring complementary benefits to child rearing. So when you have one missing, particularly the male, she says predictable patterns of early sexual behavior among girls and criminal behavior among boys rise. And that's just because they're missing their dad. And it's so, so sad. She says sociologists overwhelmingly agree outcomes for children are best when the children are raised by their married mother and father, a consensus backed by decades of research on marriage and family. And these aren't like right-wing social scientists. These aren't left-wing social scientists. Taken as a whole, everyone agrees that these things actually matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. It's just incredible to me how the, like Chloe's saying, like how this married father and mother home isn't seen. I think we can all like acknowledge the differences. Like Chloe said, like, you know, we can all acknowledge differences between man and woman and how they help impact someone. And so these are stats. I mean, these are from not right-wing people, but it's still showing that your mother is going to affect you in a way that your father isn't, in the same way with your father. And I think the reason there's such an emphasis on fatherless homes is because there are more of them. It's just a lot more common for there to be fatherless homes, when really there shouldn't be either. I mean, that's a large emphasis, mm-hmm. but still, it's just like biologically you're looking at it, and men and women are very different creatures that bring different things to the table, and it's like you can't raise one child on one half of it. Like,
yeah,
that's not biologically what was intended to happen.
Right. And she has this whole chapter, and she includes a lot of anecdotes, and there's specifically one story that just really jumped out to me. She records this woman who grew up with two mothers. She said, "The pain in my life did not stem from the state of not recognizing the relationship between my two moms. It stemmed from the turmoil of desperately wanting a father. I love my mom deeply, fiercely, and unconditionally. She's an incredible woman, but I also love my absent father. I love a man whom I don't even know. A man who, by all accounts, is a lousy father. I don't know why I love him. I just do. I ached for my father to love me. I ached for the father I knew I would never have." This is the ache that women have in their hearts when they're growing up without a father. And that leads them to search for a resolution, a satisfaction to that hole in all mm-hmm. of the wrong places, which leads to more early pregnancies, which leads to more homelessness mm-hmm. and more brokenness. It's mm-hmm. it's a cycle that doesn't stop. It's vicious.
And also, like, an important thing with that is, yes, it leads to like early pregnancies, homelessness, things like that. But when you don't have, like, if you're a girl and you don't have that father in your home, ideally a good father in your home, your parents are married, that kind of thing, like the kind of life we're talking about that we should all be supporting and promoting and trying to make universal, you don't have a good example of what your future spouse should look like.
Exactly.
You know, like, if you grow up without a father, how are you supposed to know, like, oh, like, this is how a man should treat a woman. This is how my future spouse, my future boyfriend, however should be treating me. You see that example in your parents.
Mm-hmm.
Your
mm-hmm.
parents aren't going to be perfect, but it's also in, like, in how they treat each other and how they treat the family. And you can't be expected to, like, you have no example of that.
Right.
And, you know, it works the same way if you're a son without a mother. I mean, that's even harder mm-hmm. to know how
and
to treat your wife,
you know? And a son without a dad? Like, there's no guidance. There's
how is he supposed to know how to be a good boyfriend and a good husband?
Yeah, yeah.
And
there's one more story that I'll read about this specific topic. And it's just, again, it's just heart-wrenching. Again, another woman. She says, "Am I the only one who feels this way? Am I a bad daughter because I wish I had a dad? Is there anyone else who has two moms or two dads who wonders what it would be like if they were born into a normal family? Is there anyone else who wants to be able to use the word normal without getting a lecture on what is normal? I don't know my real father, and I never will. It's weird, but I miss him. I miss this man I will never know. Is it wrong for me to long for a father like my friends have? She has two brothers, and I play basketball with them all the time. It feels so amazing to be included in their family. When I am there, I think this is what it's like to be in a family that has a mom and a dad. It's just heart-wrenching. But mm-hmm. these are the facts of what happens when these beautiful children are being raised in families without a mother and a father. And it's not just in same-sex marriages. We also wanted to touch on IVF and surrogacy. So mm-hmm. In vitro fertilization, which is kind of a hot topic right now.
It is.
Especially with the Supreme Court in Alabama, was it? Or Arkansas? I don't remember which.
I don't think it was Arkansas.
Yeah, you would know. I would have mentioned that. It was Alabama then. But just these decisions about IVF. And again, there's a lot of stories in that book just about these kids that have grown up, they know
it was Alabama, by the way.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But these kids that have grown up in homes that, you know, and maybe they are born into a family with a mom and a dad, but typically IVF is used for people who want to have a child, or like surrogacy is used mm-hmm. in these cases. IVF isn't necessarily used solely for that, but surrogacy is, where the mom doesn't carry the child, or like someone else will carry the child for two fathers typically. And that's just even worse because you may not even have either of your biological parents with you. Mm-hmm. Like you're just born into a family that is not related to you at all.
The hard thing about, I don't know, IVF and surrogacy are two very different things. So it's hard to talk about them. They definitely have a lot of overlapping things.
Definitely.
And I think it is a hot topic, even amongst, Christians and conservatives. Mm-hmm. So I think normally the things we talk about, like a lot of like Christians and conservatives would agree with us, but mm-hmm. I think we would maybe find some, it's not backlash, but just some like differences in this. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times IVF is used like when women like can't get pregnant and things like that. On mm-hmm. one hand, it's like, oh, well, like, I just don't know. I don't know. It's so odd. It's like, but you want them to get pregnant, but it's also like, but this isn't natural. Like, this isn't the way it was intended.
And what happens is it also just, it makes you think, it forces you to realize, where does life begin? Mm-hmm. Life begins at conception, which means that these, if you have, eight eggs and the sperm are frozen, right, you choose two, you still have six other kids that are just in a freezer. That's mm-hmm. very, very wrong. And I personally am very against IVF and surrogacy, both things. I think if you want children, mm-hmm. and I understand the pain. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I understand the pain, but like, I understand that the pain that women have.
Yeah, you don't necessarily empathize with the pain, but
Right, yeah. But like that's a hard thing. Like mm-hmm. you won't ever be able to experience that natural motherhood that we all long for.
Yeah.
As women.
Yeah, I think my understanding of it and even my opinion on the topic has definitely changed as I've gotten older and like started to see it. Because on one hand, I'm like, yeah, like I want to empathize with these people. And I've seen, whether it's like people I follow on social media or things like that, or that have been through this, but also, I'm going to have to agree with Chloe on it. It just doesn't seem, it's not natural. And I don't, those kids in those freezers. I mean,
I know.
If you really believe that like life begins at conception, mm-hmm. how many lives are in freezers right now?
There's millions.
It poses an interesting question. It's like, do you want those like frozen embryos to like be like put in women and like have those children? Like, yes, those are kids, you want them to grow up.
People adopt also, them all the time. That I think that's beautiful.
I think it's beautiful, but I think it also encourages the practice.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm gonna be honest. I do not know enough about the topic to like I do not know enough about the topic to be considered like an expert by any means. Like, I am no means an expert. But I do think it's beautiful when people do adopt the frozen embryos, but still it's also weird that we have the technology to do this.
I know.
Like, it's kind of odd when you think about it.
Yeah. Well, and with IVF and surrogacy, it kind of brings in adoption. That's the final thing we wanted mm-hmm. to talk about. And, I have, a part of a family that has adopted two kids. It's just most incredible blessing. They're both older than I am. I've never known life without them. But adoption is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredible that there can be such redemption out of such dark situations. And I have just seen God's grace so clearly and evidently through adoption. I also just wanted to kind of close out this episode, kind of taking it back to where we all began. in Genesis. We kind of started there. You know, what does family look like? What does marriage look like? What are these roles that God has created for the family? And I just wanted to go back and read that part from Genesis. Genesis 2:18, it says, "Then the Lord God said, 'It is not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him.'" He talks about the animals and says, "But for Adam, there was not a helper found fit for him. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. And while he slept, he took one of the ribs, closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman and brought her to the man. Then the man said, 'This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh.'" That is God's design for the family. Kind of shows this intentionality that God created the man for the woman and the woman for the man. Mm-hmm. They are supposed to be, they're created for each other, to help each other, to support each other, to grow in love for God mm-hmm. and with each other together, and to create a family. God says, after this, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Mm-hmm. And family is beautiful. This is this basic building block structure that God has created for society. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so integral that we maintain the integrity of the family.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's cool that, you know, through this series, we've gotten to look at the biblical aspects of it, cultural, even biological, mm-hmm. you know, all support those biblical aspects of it. But thank you guys so much for joining along with us. I think that this especially is a very good topic to discuss and research further. I mean, we'll definitely research it further, encourage you guys to research it further as well at this mm-hmm. kind of, you know, this phase of our life where we should be informed about these things. So thank you guys so much for joining us. It has been a great series.
As always, my name is Chloe Knoll.
And I'm Mattingly Watson.
And this is Fact of Life.
The Fact of Life podcast can be found at Fact of Life Podcast on Instagram or at Fact of Life Pod on Twitter. Reach out to the host at factoflifepodcast@gmail.com or send a message on Instagram or Twitter. Listen to the Fact of Life anywhere you get your podcasts, especially right here on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on The Fact of Life.